Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 213 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last events, we lost 4.2 units overall for UFC Fight Night 112 and Bellator 180 after going 1-2 on our premium bets. We also lost our 1 unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC 213 features a 12 fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a light heavyweight contest between a pair of UFC newcomers. We have Trevin Giles, who is 9-0, taking on James Bochnevich, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Giles, minus 315, the comeback on Bochnevich at plus 235. Right now, looking over our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it's currently Giles minus 335, the comeback on Bochnevich at plus 275. So a little bit more action coming in Giles' way. I get it. He's a little bit more of the hype prospect for sure. This guy's been an LFC, RFA, LFA veteran. So basically, he's been fighting on the Access TV cards. And man, I mean, he's had some fun fights. So I encourage you guys that do not watch Access TV on Friday nights for the LFA fights and, you know, CES and all the other leagues. This is where the UFC is picking up a lot of these fighters. Obviously, a lot of you guys that have listening to this podcast already realize that. But man, Giles is just another one that's coming over to the UFC that deserves to be here. They had some skill. So this guy has some hype around him. The guy's a well-rounded fighter. He's got proven toughness. And I mean, the sky's the limit for him at age 24. So I'm expecting some really good things. Now, of course, he's got some holes in his game that he's got to seal up a little bit. He's got to get a little bit better. But overall, I mean, I like what I see because the guy has explosive power on the feet. He's got some speed. He's got some wrestling to go along with it. He needs to work that takedown defense some and, you know, scramble out of positions. But he's got that kind of toughness that even if you do have him in a bad spot on the ground, he manages somehow to squeeze his way out or, you know, scramble out of the bad spot, get on top, and then start to control the action more times than not as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Giles. Now, both these guys usually fight at middleweight, and they're now fighting at light heavyweight for this because they both took this fight on short notice, basically. So the weight cut's going to go a lot easier. So there's no real edge to either for either guy here. Bochnevich, on the other hand, though, he trains with a good camp as well. I mean, he's coming out of the Ben Rothwell camp, so he's got a striking background, but really it's his sub game where it's at. I mean, he has 7 of his 8 wins by submission. So for kind of being listed, and I've heard on previous footage that he's more of a striking based fighter, I think that's a little bit false. But if you look at him, he can definitely throw some hands. He's got some power on the feet as well. But the ground game and his chokes is where it's at for Bochnevich. And I think that that's exactly what he's going to try to do here as well. This is a big step up in competition for him. Cause if you look at his level of competition before debuting in the UFC here, I mean, he's fought and beat mostly can level type of fighters. I mean, guys that don't have a really strong resume. So that being said, you got to favor Giles even more in this spot because it is a bigger step up for Bochnevich than it is for Giles here in this spot. So I think Bochnevich is going to need to get this fight on the floor. I think he's going to struggle doing so because I don't think his wrestling is quite good enough to get Giles on the ground and control him there. So I think Giles, it's his fight to win or lose. He's going to be able to dictate and control where the pace of the fight and where it goes. And I think he's going to be able to outpoint Bochnevich here on the ground as well or overall. Now, I also should mention that Bochnevich has never been out of the first round. So his cardio is a little bit of a concern as well as the fight progresses, whereas Giles has been, you know, to decisions before long, hard fought battles. So I know his gas tank, even if he fights tired, he can definitely make it 3 strong rounds. So a little bit more confident in Giles for sure. I mean, that's why you're seeing him as a 3-1 favorite. And I think he is probably going to get the job done. And more than likely, it'll be inside the distance as the fight progresses a little bit, because I'm not sure again if Bochnevich can survive and make it 3 rounds against a guy like Giles. So my pick is going to be Giles to get the W here in his debut.
Very intriguing fight, and as Nick mentioned, they're both actually middleweights, so this will be the only time you probably see either guy at light heavyweight. They're just doing that because they got booked on about 2 weeks' notice. So I'm just going to pretend that they're fighting at middleweight because that's really what they fight at. Now, Giles, to me, is the much better athlete. I mean, this guy is quick. He's got power. He's a little bit more well-rounded than Bogdanovich. And the other thing is he hasn't really been focusing fully on his fight career. He's been trying to get his degree while fighting. And I believe he finished his degree just a couple months ago. And now he's focused entirely on MMA. I think we can expect to see him take a few leaps forward, especially considering how much of a talented raw athlete he is. So with Bogdanovich, I think what you see is what you get. I mean, he's a submission-focused fighter. He looks to take guys out very quickly, or he can get taken out really quickly. That's pretty much what's happened in every one of his fights, as Nick mentioned, everything in the first round. Giles, he got tested his last fight in a main event of an LFA 3 against Ryan Spann. That was a really close fight. Giles' offensive grappling kind of helped him out there because there were several moments in the fight where Spann was trying to lock in submissions. And so that is a bit of a concern that he was getting in submission trouble, and now he's facing a guy that pretty much exclusively goes for submissions. But overall, I just think Giles is athletic and talented enough to get out of those bad situations. And I expect him to be significantly improved even compared to the Trevin Giles that we most recently saw on film. So I'm leaning more towards Giles. I think Bogdanovich is a little too one-dimensional here, and Giles should be able to avoid that one dimension enough to either win a decision or take over late, since, again, we've never seen Bogdanovich outside the first round. That could come into play if this fight does leave the first round. So my pick is going to be Trevin Giles. Now dropping down to the featherweight division for another pair of UFC debuts, we have Cody Stammen, who is 13-1, taking on Tarion Ware, who is 17-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Stammen, minus 270, the comeback on Ware at plus 190. Right now looking over at five dimes. It is currently Stammen at minus 275. The comeback on Ware is at plus 235. So line margins tighten up a little bit, and it's basically staying where it's at. Solid line at minus 270, just under 3-1. I think it's fair. I mean, Stammen has definitely been an impressive prospect to watch. I mean, there's been some buzz around him for a little while. Of course, he trains with Cruikshank and crew out in Michigan. So that camp's starting to produce some talent for sure, because this guy, I think, is definitely a highlight for them. I mean, he's well-rounded. He's got that kind of strong athletic physique, well-rounded skill set. He's got good boxing, good kickboxing really as well, good wrestling. Takedown defense is decent, nice speed and power, and he's got cardio to go along with it. His wins overall have been solid over decent competition. So he's definitely a prospect with some serious hype, and he's going to be a tough test for Ware. And Ware, I've been nothing but impressed with throughout his career. He's a savvy vet, and he's looking really to make a splash in the UFC here in his debut. I mean, this is another case where these guys are taking the fight on 9 days' notice, so they're fighting at featherweight, but both these guys really should be fighting at bantamweight. So it's the same scenario as the last fight that we spoke about. Not one of them is really going to have an advantage, of course, because, they both really should be fighting at bantamweight anyway. So at featherweight just gives them a little bit more time to make the weight cut and just be a little bit less harsh on their body. So I get it. So Ware has a ton of experience, though, getting back to him a little bit. He's got wins over very solid competition. You want to talk about the access fights that I was just recently referring to in the last fight. I mean, Ware's a veteran of those organizations as well. And basically, he's a striking stylist. I mean, his boxing is his best attribute. He's definitely improving his wrestling and his ground skill. I mean, he can sub you now off his back as well. So he's pretty well-rounded in his own right. He's got decent takedown defense. And if you do get him on the ground, if you happen to get him on his back, he does attack with triangles and armbars off his back as well. So he's not an easy guy to deal with wherever the fight takes place. He's a smart fighter. So this is going to be a great fight, really. I think the line's probably a tad high at near 3-1, but overall, I think Stammen's going to be the one probably pushing the higher pace, and I think he's going to outpoint Ware along the way. Maybe he gets a takedown, stays out of submission problems. So I think Stamen basically is going to be the one that wins on the scorecard. It's going to be very tough for him to stop Ware, but I think he probably wins a 29-28 type of decision, competitive decision, but I think it goes his way. So I'm expecting good things for both these guys in the future. They both definitely belong in the bantamweight division on the UFC roster, so I'm glad they picked him up, and I'm glad they're getting a shot. So my pick for this one, though, is going to be Stamen to win and probably on the cards.
Both of these guys definitely are talented. My issue, though, is it seems like just about every time that Tarion Ware really takes that next level, he isn't able to get things going. I mean, he lost to Joe Soto, who's now in the UFC. He lost to Luke Sanders, who's now in the UFC. He lost a former UFC fighter, Jared Papazian, although he did avenge that loss recently. And he also lost to a tough Brazil guy in Leandro Higo. So I'm a little concerned that, you know, he's facing another guy that's UFC caliber and he's just not going to quite reach his potential. Like, he always seems to fall short when he faces those type of fighters. Granted, he is on a nice little streak and he has beaten a couple guys with at least solid veteran track records. Like I mentioned, he beat Papazian recently. He also beat former Bellator fighter Nick Mamelis recently. So, you know, he's got that on his track record and he does look like he's starting to turn things around in the bantamweight division. But again, Cody Stamen is very well rounded out of that Michigan top team. He's getting some good training over there because, he doesn't have a lot of holes in his game. He puts good pressure on his opponents. He has a good assortment of, knockouts, submissions, and decision victories. So we know, that conditioning shouldn't be a problem, and conditioning shouldn't be a problem for Ware either. He's had no problem going the distance to win. So, I think these guys are very evenly matched, but I like Cody Stamen's pressure, and I like, I think his strikings actually could decide this one. I mean, he's going to be in Ware's face, and Ware can be, even though he, is potentially the quicker fighter, I think he's a bit indecisive at times, and I think Stamen can just get in his face a little bit more, and I can see Stamen either eking out a decision or maybe, you know, catching a submission late as Ware starts to fade maybe from the pressure. So I like Stamen's pace, and I think that will be enough for him to win, even though Ware does have a bit of a size advantage. So my pick is going to be Cody Stamen as well. Now, moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a bantamweight contest between Rob Font, who is 13-2, and Douglas Silva de Andrade, who is 24-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Font at -215, the comeback on de Andrade, at +165. Right now, looking over at 5dimes.eu. It's currently Font -320. De Andrade is at +260. So more action coming in Font's way. I do understand it a little bit. I mean, De Andrade doesn't really get that much respect, it seems, from the betters overall. But now, I mean, coming off of a pretty impressive win over Briones, even though Briones doesn't get a ton of respect either, I think he's still, in my opinion, earned a little bit more respect back, but I guess it's not the case with the betters here against Font here. I mean, you have striker versus striker in this matchup, and it should be a great fight to watch, especially for all the fans out there. I mean, Font is going to have a little bit of an edge. He's got a little bit of a reach. I think he's got more pure punching power with his boxing, but I think De Andrade is actually the better overall striker. He mixes things up a little bit more. His kickboxing is a little bit better overall. He's got that crazy unorthodox style that's actually pretty technically sound as well, meaning that it's pretty, even though he spins and does some unorthodox technique, it's pretty clean. It's not like he's swinging too wild or aggressive. So I think this is going to be a very good fight because De Andrade is definitely a very dangerous guy, but he is hittable, and the power that Font possesses in with his hands and his boxing is something else to watch. So he can definitely deliver the knockout. He's done it time and time again throughout his career. I think also in his back pocket, he'll have a little bit of wrestling. I mean, Font doesn't really have to use wrestling in most cases. I mean, he doesn't really prefer to go that route, but he's smart enough that if he knows that, hey, I got to get this guy down, steal the round or whatnot, I think he will do that. So there's definitely a lot of advantages in this fight towards Font, and I think he is going to probably get the job done, but I'm expecting a little bit more competitive fight than most out there. I mean, I wouldn't exactly count out De Andrade in this spot. I think it is a striker versus striker matchup, and even though Font does have the edge, I still think it's going to be a fun fight. So it should be fairly competitive. So I don't really necessarily agree with where the line is right now, but I do think that Font's going to get the W. So I'm going to pick him to win.
I'll admit that I've underestimated Douglas Silva de Andrade a little bit. I thought that he would have some trouble against Briones in his last fight, and he just tore through him. So he looked great and definitely raised his stock a little bit in my eyes. But I think this is a really tough strength of competition raise for level four Andrade here. Rob Font is, in my opinion, a top 15 UFC bantamweight. Right on the fringes, but I mean, he's there. Font has nasty power. He's pretty well-rounded overall. And, I really like his use of space, his explosiveness. He's showcased some just absolutely devastating finishing ability if he can clip you. Now Andrade, I think he mixes things up a little bit better on the feet. Like he throws a lot more kicks, and if he can really start working the body kicks and low kicks, they could have an effect on Font, but I think Font will use distance well and then step in and land with that huge right hand of his, which has been pretty devastating already. I mean, he's picked up those just downright devastating knockouts already in the UFC with his wins over George Roop, Matt Schnell, and even Joey Gomez. So the other thing is, and, you know, and I've brought this up before, but Andrade, you know, he's just so muscular that, like, sometimes his striking is a bit stiff and robotic, and I think that that could be a bit of a tell, and Font should be able to avoid some of the heavier strikes that Andrade does throw. So, I like Font's pace. He throws a little bit more often. He's a little bit more accurate. And their defense is about the same. So I think that could play a factor here. So, I'm going to side with Rob Font. I think, I'm not convinced he'll get a knockout victory, but this could be the potential for his first ever decision victory inside the octagon. So, I'm going to side with Rob Font. He'll be my pick. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Jordan Meehan, who is 29-11, and Bilal Muhammad, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Man, this is a tough one. It's definitely a head scratcher. Meehan, I opened at -140. The comeback on Muhammad at even money. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Muhammad -165. The comeback on Meehan at +145. So not as much of a head scratcher out there for most of you bettors that it came in on Muhammad. I get it. I think Muhammad's a little bit more solid. I think Muhammad, you can kind of depend on him a little bit more. He has no quit in him. I mean, he can be put out. Obviously, he's been knocked out. He's been rocked before as well. So his chin is definitely suspect, and it has to be concerned. I mean, amongst all the bettors out there that have taken him, I think that that's your major concern there. But overall, if his chin holds up, the guy is tough to beat. I mean, he sets a really high pace. He's a well-rounded fighter. He's got decent hands. His leg kicks in his last fight against Brown were ridiculously good. I mean, that really set the tone from the beginning of the fight. I mean, he was doing damage with those kicks. Credit to Brown. I mean, he was taking them pretty well, but a lot of fighters can't really withstand that kind of pressure and especially getting their leg chewed up like that. So Muhammad overall, I think he bounced back and he needed to, and he performed really well. And I think people are counting that, crediting him for that, and then discrediting obviously Meehan, because man, it's kind of disappointing with Meehan. He's got so much talent. I mean, he could have honestly, at one point I thought he could potentially make a run for the UFC welterweight title. That's how talented this guy is skill-wise. I mean, he's got great striking. He's got good ability as far as wrestling and his takedown game goes. He's got good submissions to go along with it as well. So he's a pretty well-rounded fighter, and he's a finisher. I mean, the guy is ultra-dangerous, and we've seen it time and time again. But the problem with him is that we've noticed, and it's come out recently in his fights, he's got that quit in him a little bit. I mean, when, you know, he gets out of the first round at times, he starts slowing up a little bit. And then if he's fighting a guy that's going to really put the pressure on him or land some hard punches or kicks, or so be it, they're going to, you know, they're going to put that kind of pressure on him. He just seems to kind of will it away and either gets beat by the decision or gets finished. So he does have a little bit of quit in him, I think. And that's not what you want to see. And it's a shame, because a couple years ago, this line would have definitely been in Meehan's favor. But now I do understand it. I think the bettors out there trust Muhammad just a little bit more. But I'll tell you what, in round one, Meehan is going to probably put it on Muhammad. So it's really up to Muhammad if he survives or not. If he survives, he probably wins. If he does not survive the first round, he probably loses. I mean, Meehan can definitely end this fight early on and get the W here. So that's why I'm kind of going to go with Meehan here. I'll go against the grain. I think a lot of you guys are counting him out a little bit, kind of throwing him in the trash too soon. I think offensively his skill can definitely threaten Muhammad. I mean, Muhammad has been, I think, hit by lesser guys and has had trouble. I think Meehan's power is going to come into play here early on, and he's just going to have to finish the job. If Muhammad again survives, then Meehan's probably in some trouble. But I'm going to have faith enough in Meehan to think that he really needs to get this W here. I mean, he's bouncing back from a little bit of brief retirement to a disappointing loss in his comeback fight. And so he has to get the job done here. He has to get this win. It's very important for him. Whereas I think Muhammad, not that any of these fighters can afford a loss, but I think Muhammad can a little bit more. I don't think he gets cut with a loss here, where I think if Meehan gets another loss, he probably does get the exit door shown to him. So I'll go with Meehan. I think he does probably win this fight, and he probably wins it in round one. So Meehan is my pick.
This fight really does boil down to the first round. Bilal Muhammad is a fighter that we all know has no problem going three rounds if need be. He had a really long stretch of decisions throughout his career. And Jordan Meehan is a guy that is amazing in the first round. I just talking with Nick before the podcast, we were saying, you know, if UFC fights were only one round, Meehan could be champ potentially. He's that strong in the first round. I mean, he's had multiple fights where he just crushed his opponent early and then just completely wilted after that. I mean, you just go back and Matt Brown, Thiago Alves. I mean, all the examples are there. The problem though is Muhammad, he's had fights where he got blistered in the first round. So, you look, Vicente Luque crushed him in the first round. Alan Joban really, really took it to him in the first round. Wasn't quite able to finish him. And then that fight ended up being super close. But just the fact that Muhammad has been finished in the first round already in the UFC and then almost finished another time by guys that I think, at least in the first round, aren't quite as strong a striker as Jordan Meehan, is definitely a huge, huge red flag. But Muhammad knows that. I mean, you saw that in the last fight against Randy Brown, a guy that is long, lanky, kind of a similar build to Jordan Meehan. And Muhammad just kept his distance, whittled away at him at first, and then just really started to take the fight to him as the fight wore on. And if Muhammad can just whittle away and avoid getting blitzed early and getting hurt, then he's going to be in really good shape. So I think Muhammad understands his weakness and will play around it. And Meehan just can't, because after 5 minutes, that adrenaline dump kicks in and then he's toast. So as long as Muhammad avoids getting caught in that first 5 minutes, I think there's a really good chance he wins. So I'm going to side with Bilal Muhammad to pick up either a decision or maybe even a late finish. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Thiago Santos, who is 14-5, taking on Gerald Meerschaert, who is 26-8. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Talk about a line flip. I opened Meerschaert -190, the comeback on Santos at +150. That's not a mistake. It's exactly what I said. -190 Meerschaert, Santos at +150. Right now, it's Santos -145, Meerschaert is +125. So didn't gauge the public correctly on this one, that's for sure. I thought Meerschaert pretty much earned the respect of those bettors out there. I mean, they've been betting him the last couple fights. And I thought with Santos having some difficulties on the ground, people would probably side a little bit more with Meerschaert with the hype and the role that he's been on recently. But that's not the case. They're respecting Santos's power on the feet, his takedown defense as well. So I get it. I understand why people came in this way. I mean, if this fight stays standing, there's no question Santos is the better striker. Although Meerschaert, he could do some things on the feet as well. I mean, especially with Santos's chin being a little bit questionable. And I I'm not saying Meerschaert's going to stand and bang with Santos. I don't think it's a good idea. Santos is the better striker, but I'm saying chin to chin, I don't really trust either guy, even though Meerschaert hasn't really been knocked out. But Santos's power with his kicks, his punches, is definitely a threat to most people. So I think a lot of people expect this fight to stay upright, and if it does, Santos probably wins. And I could see that, but I kind of disagree a little bit because I think Mearshart's slick enough that he always finds a way to get the fight to the floor. And once on the floor, I mean, he's ultra confident on the ground right now. I mean, you could tell. I mean, his attitude, everything, his swag about him, everything about him, he knows that he has an edge on the ground. I mean, he submitted some really solid fighters. Now, of course, throughout his career, he's been submitted as well on the ground, but I think he's really hit his groove and he's hit his stride and he's really improved and kind of closed those gaps and holes that he's had defensively on the ground. So his ground game in most cases is going to definitely trump anybody that he steps in the cage with at 185, all depending, of course. But in this fight in particular, it's definitely the case. If Mearshart can get the fight to the ground or not even get it to the ground, he doesn't have to use his wrestling. I mean, he's opportunistic. He takes advantage. He might hop on his back. He might get a choke standing or who knows what. I mean, Mearshart is that type of fighter that if he gets the opportunity to pounce on a submission, he grabs your neck, grabs a limb, he'll take it. So I think that Santos can't afford to make any of those mistakes. If so, he's going to pay for it and probably get submitted rather quickly on the ground. Now, again, if it stays standing, I could see Santos getting the W here. So he's going to need to kind of sprawl brawl, keep the fight upright and kind of outpoint Mearshart to get the win. I think along the way, he's going to get caught, though. He's going to get subbed. So I think Mearshart's going to pull off an impressive submission finish here is how I think it ends up playing out. But again, everybody else kind of disagrees. The majority of the people out there are betting Santos like he already kind of won the fight. So I could be wrong, but I do think that Mearshart probably does what he's been doing so far in the UFC and gets another submission win. So I'm going to go that route, and at plus money, I think it is a dog or pass situation at this point for sure. So Mearshart's my pick.
And I completely agree that this is a striker versus grappler matchup, and it's all going to boil down to whether or not Mearshart can close the distance. Thiago Santos has faced fighters that want to get him on the floor, like Theodoru, and he was able to fend those attempts off and then just batter away with strikes. But he's also faced guys that were extremely one-dimensional, even more one-dimensional than Mearshart, in Eric Spicely, and he got taken down and he got tapped out. So it's very hit and miss at times with Thiago Santos. Now, he looked great in his last fight against Jack Marshman, but that was mostly because Marshman wanted to stand and bang, and Santos, he can stand and bang with just about anybody in the middleweight division. Now, Mearshart, his stand-up is decent, but it's not good enough to hang with Santos long-term. So I think that he'll stand with Santos a little bit, but only so that he can potentially soften up the takedown defense, because Santos will definitely be hardwired looking to fend off takedowns. And another thing that Nick mentioned is Mearshart's opportunistic. He actually hasn't picked up a takedown inside the UFC, despite the fact that he's got two submission victories in his two fights. He's been very opportunistic, just looking for submissions, or maybe his opponent looks for a takedown and then he reverses the position, or maybe he just grabs him along the fence and looks for the submission just because they're close. So, Mearshart, he could be diving on anything at any moment. This guy is a very talented grappler. He's a savvy veteran. He's, you know, he's been around the game a long time and he's on a really nice run. He seems like he's really started to put it together, and if he can close the distance, I think that he's got a great chance here of tapping out Santos. It's just all about whether or not Santos can stay away from him. If Santos has good footwork, maybe he can keep Mearshart on the edges. But I honestly think that Santos could be in some big trouble, mainly because of the Eric Spicely fight. So I'm going to side with Gerald Mearshart. I think at some point he finds an opening and gets that submission and probably gets a finish. So my pick is going to be Gerald Mearshart. Now moving up down to the welterweight division, we have Chad Laprise, who is 12-2, taking on Brian Camozzi, who is 7-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Laprise -215, Camozzi +165. That was my opener officially. And right now it's Laprise -550. The comeback in Camozzi is +425. So a lot of straight action right away coming in on Laprise. The line wasn't quite high enough, obviously, and then some parlay action coming in as well. So a lot of people banking on an easy fight for Laprise. And if you look at the way Kimozi's been looking compared to Laprise. Obviously, Laprise has better experience inside the octagon. He's proven that time and time again. And Kimozi, a lot of hype coming into his UFC debut, obviously, with his brother already being there and, you know, the UFC bringing him on the roster as well. Again, talk about access fights. I mean, Kimozi's a veteran of that organization as well, actually won a title there. So Kimozi's not bad, and he is improving overall. I mean, if you look at the early part of his career, he's definitely taken strides with his stand-up game, with his submission game across the board. He's a much better fighter than he was early on in his career. But in his last fight, I mean, Brown was able to weather somewhat of an early storm from Kimozi and able to do some damage, and then he ended up finishing Kimozi. So it looked like there was a little bit of quit in him, looked defensively like he was flawed, looked like he didn't like getting hit too much. So I get it. A lot of people are kind of fading Kimozi at this point, thinking, hey, man, the guy looked like garbage in his official debut, and he losing like he did. They don't have faith in Laprise. At least you know what you're getting in with him. I mean, he's a very solid. He's obviously an Ultimate Fighter winner, which is not an easy task. So that's an accomplishment alone. But not just that. I mean, he's always had pretty solid striking. The guy moves well. He's a smart fighter. He's got good IQ. He could take the fight to the ground offensively with his wrestling at times and kind of score points that way. So I get what people see out there. He is taking this fight on short notice, though, and he is moving up a weight class. Now, of course, he did struggle to make weight, so this weight cut might not be – I mean, it's probably a better move for him right now, it seems like. But, I mean, we'll see. I think that Kimozi's actually going to have some advantages in this fight. He's going to be a lot longer. I mean, he's going to have a 7-inch reach advantage alone. And I think Laprise is going to kind of struggle with the height and the reach advantages on the feet of Kimozi. And if he doesn't land that punch that's going to get through and kind of rock Kimozi and get him in a little bit of trouble and start making him think, Kimozi's offense is going to be right on him. I mean – and Laprise, if you can say anything negative about him, is he is a little bit chinny at times. He's been officially knocked out only once, but he has been bothered and rocked throughout his career a little bit in some spots as well. So I think there is a little bit of a concern with Laprise's chin somewhat. And I think that Kimozi is going to obviously be looking to rebound and prove that he does belong in the UFC roster. He's going to have some extra motivation, I mean, needed here, because if not, if he gets another loss here, I mean, the UFC could very easily let him go. And that would be that for him. So he definitely needs to fight hard here and pull off what is a decent upset right now. I don't know if he's going to get it done. I doubt he does. I do side with Laprise in this fight. I think Laprise is the better fighter. And again, not just the striking. I think he could probably get some takedowns along the way. And if Kimozi does survive, he could probably win on the scorecard. So I favor Laprise on the cards. I think overall he is the better fighter right now. I mean, I think Kimozi underrated submission game somewhat. I mean, his guillotine choke is sick. So if Laprise does go for a takedown, he's got to watch his neck, because once Kimozi gets around it could be a wrap there as well. So there's some things to like about Kimozi, and the price should not be this high. There's no way Laprise should be -550 taking a fight on short notice up a weight class, regardless if he's fought at 170 or not before, and especially against a fighter like Kimozi. Stylistically, I mean, it's basically a striker versus striker type of matchup. Both of the guys are more well-rounded than that, and I realize Kimozi has more wins by submission, but it is what it is. It's an intriguing matchup, to say the least, and it should not be -550. So I'm going to pick Laprise to win. I don't agree with the line. I don't agree with the movement. I think it's going to be far more competitive than most people think. And I'm going to be probably rooting for the underdog, obviously. The sports books are going to need a nice parlay buster along the way. So I'll be pulling in, rooting Kimozi in, I guess. And I don't expect him to win, but it'd be nice if he does pull off this upset. So my official pick will be Laprise, but I'm going to be rooting on the dog, that's for sure.
There are definitely several factors here that are going against Chad Laprise. I mean, number one, as Nick mentioned, he's taking it on short notice. He's stepping in for Alan Joban. He's moving up a weight class, so he's taking on someone who is going to have a major size advantage against him. And that is a bit of a concern. Now, granted, as Nick mentioned, Laprise has fought at welterweight before. He originally dropped down to the lightweight division about 4 years ago, so he's just kind of returning to, you know, where he was at the beginning of his career. Now, Brian Kimozi, though, he's tough. I mean, he's going to have 7 inches in reach on him. He's going to be 4 inches taller. So, Laprise, he's going to have his work cut out for him. I mean, if Kimozi can get this fight in the clinch and kind of bully Laprise a little bit, there's going to be opportunities for him to get something going. That being said, Laprise is definitely the more technical striker. He put a good pace on. I mean, this guy throws with high volume, good accuracy. So he's got a lot of things going for him. And Kimozi isn't exactly the most powerful, dangerous guy. really he's only that dangerous if he can get inside position in the clinch where he can start working you over with knees and elbows. That's really where Camozzi's strongest. If I'm Laprise, I want to keep my distance, even though Camozzi has the reach advantage, because I think Laprise's technical boxing skill will overcome the reach deficiency, and he'll be able to land at boxing range, maybe get some kicks mixed in. But overall, I think his boxing is his biggest strength, and if he can get that going, he can do some real damage here. It just all boils down to how Laprise performs on short notice, up a weight class against a bigger opponent. So, like Nick, I think that this fight's going to be a lot closer than the people that are betting Laprise up have indicated. But I'm still siding with Laprise just based on him being the more technical veteran fighter. But Brian Camozzi could surprise us, especially if he can grab a hold of Laprise and, you know, push him around a little bit and use that size and strength advantage. But my pick is going to be Chad Laprise. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a heavyweight contest between Travis Brown, who is 18-6-1, taking on Alexei Olenek, who is 51-10-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Brown, minus 180, the comeback on Olenek at plus 140. Right now, looking over at five dimes, it is Brown minus 220. The comeback on Olenek is at plus 180. Difficult line to set, man. The way Brown's been fighting, I know he looked good early on in that Lewis fight, but man, I mean, it's just hard to depend on Brown these days, of course. And with all the ridicule and kind of hate that him and the Rousey camp have been getting, it's a little bit unfair, I think. I mean, obviously, especially the Ronda Rousey part. I mean, the way everybody's kind of destroying her rep and all that right now too, and the camp situation, all that. So there's a lot, and I'm saying all this because that's exactly what people think of Brown right now. I mean, they just don't respect the guy anymore. So, and that does have an impact at the betting window as well. And that being said, the bettors at least are kind of throwing that out the window and coming in his way early on. So there was a lot to think about in this fight. I think Brown is by far the better fighter here. But man, I mean, he tends to, his fight IQ at times lets you down, disappointing for sure. His chin is a little bit suspect to say the least as well. And we're starting to see a little bit of quit in him, I think, if the going gets tough. So that's not what you want to see. So that, again, that's why it's a little bit tough. And Olenek is one of these guys, man, age 40. He finally got his chance in the UFC not long ago. He's been one of these savvy vets for a long time that has been fighting against the best possible competition there is to fight out there, and he's had a lot of success doing so. Submission game, it's where it's at. For Olenek underground, he is a beast to deal with. He's got a little bit of power on the feet as well, and of course his reach isn't that bad. So he's got kind of that old man strength that, man, if he clubs you with one of his big hands, he's going to do some damage as well, even though he's not really known for his striking skills. So with Brown's chin, you never know. I mean, this fight – there's so many ways this fight can play out. I think that Brown has good enough takedown defense that Olenek is not going to get this fight to the floor unless, again, Brown kind of quits. If that's the case, then, of course, he ends up on his back and Olenek probably finishes him there. But I think if Brown is game, he comes into this fight, he probably sprawls and brawls, and he is the longer fighter a little bit, especially with his leg reach. I mean, he's 4 inches taller. He's going to end up landing those kicks. He's going to end up landing probably the knockout punch, and he's going to put that old chin of Olenek out. I think that's what happens in this fight, and I think it needs to. If Brown wants to keep his spot on the roster and just be relevant at all in the heavyweight division, he needs to win this fight. So I'm going to pick Brown to win. I think he does probably get it done on the feet. But as far as a betting perspective goes, how could you really trust him right now? I think you stay away. You see if he can get some confidence back with a W here into his next fight. And, you know, hopefully that carries over. It's amazing how things have changed for Brown. He definitely needs to keep his focus here and get the W here if he wants to keep that slot. So I think he gets it done, though. But I think Brown probably by knockout is how it goes.
Honestly, the only way Alexei Olenek wins this fight is if Brown is way over aggressive. Kind of like the Jared Rosholt fight, where Rosholt hurt Olenek on the feet, charged in crazy, and then got clipped and knocked out. Or if Brown does something stupid like trip and slip and fall on his back and allow Olenek to get top position. Or if Brown, you know, advances to mount and then just chills there and allows Olenek to get that crazy Ezekiel choke again. So, realistically, though, I mean, Brown should be knocking Olenek out. I mean, Olenek's, you know, he's been around the block for a long time, And I've seen him against guys that were not as athletic and not as talented as Brown, and I've seen Olenek get just completely murdered in fights where guys just get in his face quick and take him out, like Neil Grove back in Bellator. So if Brown can just land heavy kicks, land heavy punches, I don't see how Alexei Olenek can win this fight. Granted, I thought that if he did that against Derek Lewis, he would win too, and he was crushing him in the first round before just fighting really stupid in the second round and getting finished himself. So, you know, fight IQ is always going to be something I'm a little concerned about with Travis Brown, especially as if he continues working with Edmund. But, I mean, Brown is just too talented for him to lose this fight. It feels like this is a bounce back fight that's been booked for him, and he should bounce back. I expect him to get the win, but like I said, it's tough to trust him at this point, but he should win. So my pick is going to be Travis Brown. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card in the lightweight division, we have former champion Anthony Pettis, who is 19-6, taking on veteran Jim Miller, who is 28-9 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Pettis, minus 265, the comeback at Miller, plus 185. Right now, looking for five dimes, it's minus 255, plus 215. Line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there's two-way action coming into this fight. Amazing how times have changed for Pettis as well, making his jump back to the lightweight division where he was king for a while. A lot of people thought that this guy would reign for, man, a long time with his skill set. He could beat you on the feet. He could submit you on the ground. How do you beat this guy? I mean, he's got decent takedown defense, but if you're able to get him on the ground, he chokes you out or armbars you. So, I mean, how are you going to beat him? And then all of a sudden, that all changed, and he started obviously not being able to finish it. RDA was able to, I mean, just surprise us all. I mean, the dominance in that fight, and Pettis hasn't really been the same since. It's been amazing, you know, the kind of decline that he's hit, because he's only 30 years old, but I'm not sure what's up. I mean, he dropped down to 145 pounds, and obviously that wasn't a good cut for him. Now he's back up to 155. And I think that, you know, all of us want to see Pettis kind of find what he once had, that championship caliber Anthony Pettis. I mean, the finisher, the exciting fighter. And I think it's still in there. He just, you know, this is going to be a good fight for him to really test it out, because Jim Miller's been one of these guys that's been around the sport for a long time. I mean, at one point, he was arguably top three in the world at lightweight. So you're talking about the champion at lightweight at one point, and then a top three competitor at lightweight at one point as well. So two definitely high caliber fighters going at it here. Now, Miller's been on a bit of a run as of late. I mean, I guess you could say a little bit more impressive, because for a while there, it looked like Miller was definitely on a big decline. You weren't going to see the best of Jim Miller for a while, and then all of a sudden he started picking back up. And I guess Brian went through it with us a while ago on a podcast as well, with his Lyme disease, the medication that he adapted and took. And you know what? It has impacted him positively, because I think since that time, since he's got his medication and his health issues, his personal health issues straightened out, he has been performing a little bit better. I mean, his last fight against Dustin Poirier was really close. I mean, you got to give him credit. Poirier is a very dangerous striker, and Miller was able to hang in there. And then before that, he beat Alves. He beat Lozon in a close, competitive, controversial type of fight. But still, Miller is performing better. His cardio is, again, getting a little bit better. He's able to go three fairly strong. So there's a lot of good things to like about Miller, and he's going to bring it here against Pettis, that's for sure. And right now, how could you not be confident against a guy like Anthony Pettis? Back in the day, he kind of had that fear factor going for him as well, where, I mean, he was, you know, his name brought a lot of value to it, and you thought, hey, this guy's a dangerous guy. He might finish me. You were definitely a little bit more concerned about facing a guy like Anthony Pettis. Right now, Miller's got to be confident. He's got to be thinking, you know what? I've been fighting pretty well. Pettis has looked pretty bad recently. I can win this fight. So mentally, I think Miller's going to be game. He's going to be prepared. He's not going to be intimidated by Pettis. Pettis, we're not sure where he's at mentally. He needs to definitely bounce back here and get the W. And really, in my opinion, it would be beneficial for him to actually get the finish too. Because if he's able to bounce back to lightweight after his loss to Holloway at featherweight, and get a finish over a guy like Miller, which is a very tough guy to finish, I think people are going to start saying, okay, lightweight is his weight class. He's back, you know what I mean, and get some positive momentum going for him. So I want to see Pettis kind of get the finish here so he gets back on track a little bit and we see some of the exciting fights that he's been able to deliver for us. So tough one, though. I think confident-wise, betting wise for this fight, you can't be that confident because of what he's shown us lately, like I said. So for me, I think it's probably going to be a competitive type of fight, and it probably hits the scorecards. I think Pettis probably edges it out, but I can't be that confident with him. I mean, especially a minus 255, I think you stay away from it. It's a dog or pass situation. I don't really particularly want to bet Miller in this spot. I think Pettis is the better fighter. He should come away with the win. So I think you pick Pettis, but you kind of stay away from this as a betting perspective. So my pick is going to be Anthony Pettis. Hopefully he shows back up and shows us kind of retro Pettis and gets a highlight reel type of knockout or submission win. So that's my pick.
I'm definitely not going to be underestimating Jim Miller here. I mean, this is a guy that looked like he was on his way out before they discovered the Lyme disease thing, and he has looked like a completely different fighter. I mean, his last fight, even though he lost it, that was against Dustin Poirier, one of the more dangerous lightweights in the entire division, and Miller went toe-to-toe with him. That was a competitive scrap. I don't think 2 years ago that version of Jim Miller would have stood a chance against Poirier. He would have taken him out in the first round. So we've seen definite improvement in Jim Miller. He still has a lot left in the tank. What we haven't seen is improvement from Anthony Pettis. I mean, he looked like crap on his way out of the lightweight division, and then he looked like crap in the featherweight division when he dropped down. And he keeps saying it's the weight cut. He's got excuse after excuse after excuse. We just need to see a return to form. I mean, he just hasn't been able to do it yet. I want to see the fighter that tore through Ben Henderson and got a first with nasty body kicks and then got a first round submission. I want to see the guy that had that amazing title defense against Gilbert Melendez where he weathered the early storm and then tapped him out. We haven't seen it. I want to see the guy that beat Donald Cerrone in one round and kicked Joe Lozon's head off. Where is that guy? Does he still exist? You know, Anthony Pettis is 30 years old now. He's had a lot of fights. He's taken a lot of damage in more recent fights. I mean, Max Holloway beat the brakes off of him with that finish in the last fight. He took a lot of damage against Rafael Dos Anjos when he lost the title. So, you know, maybe this is just who Anthony Pettis is now. And if that's the case, then Jim Miller has an even better chance of pulling off this upset than I thought. But that being said, you know, Miller, you know, he kind of relies a little bit too much on his boxing and the stand-up. So as long as Pettis can mix in his kicks, he should have the advantage here. Although Miller, if he can pressure Pettis, we've seen time and time again, Pettis has trouble fighting off of his back feet. He has trouble when he doesn't have space to use his kicks. He can't just rely on his boxing game because I don't think he has that much power in his hands. And he has trouble getting pushed into the fence, and Miller could do that as well. One thing I'm not worried about is Pettis's ground game. I mean, this guy went toe to toe with Charles Oliveira on the ground and had no problem and ended up even submitting Oliveira, kind of like what Jim Miller did. But Miller, you know, he's a threat on the ground, but Pettis shouldn't have any issues there. So overall, it's just all about whether or not Miller can push a high pace, keep Pettis moving backwards for three straight rounds without feeling the fury of those kicks. And I'm not just convinced that he's going to be able to do that. I think Pettis is too talented. I think he's insanely motivated to get back on track. And I'm going to side with Anthony Pettis here. I think that he wins a decision most likely against Jim Miller. So my pick is going to be Anthony Pettis. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have a trilogy fight between a former champion Fabricio Werdum, who is 21-6-1. He's taking on Alistair Overeem, who is 42-15 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight? And how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Overeem minus 150, the comeback on Werdum at plus 110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Overeem minus 125. Werdum is at plus 105. So 5 cent drop in the dog. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming into this fight. It is a very difficult fight. It's very difficult because right now you have a 39-year-old title contender going against a 37-year-old title contender that know each other really well, that are both, I think, past their primes and are a bit chinny. And it's not as fair to say that about Werdum, of course, but I mean, at age 39, I know he's improved quite a bit, especially his stand-up game, and that's what's going to come into play here, actually. That's what makes this fight so intriguing right now, compared to their last meeting at least, because Verdum's stand-up skill has gotten a lot better than the last time they met, that's for sure. So I think he's got it in him to possibly even knock out and catch Overeem on that chin and put him out. But obviously, it's Verdum's ground game is where it's at in most cases for him. So it's a tough one because I don't trust Verdum's chin these days, even though he's only been finished officially twice by knockout. So it is who lands the big punch first, I think, that's going to matter. Because Overeem, offensively, he's always been a beast. I mean, the guy definitely has a ton of knockout power. I mean, talk about Stipe. We were just talking about him recently as well. Overeem was almost that close to becoming champion. I mean, he rocked him early in that fight. He almost got a submission win over him as well. So Overeem's the type of fighter that can go out there and finish any heavyweight in the world. And he could do it quickly and look really good doing so. So he's definitely dangerous. And the good thing about Overeem's game is he is well-rounded. I mean, he's got wrestling unorthodox or underrated, I should say, wrestling. He's able to get the fight to the ground when he wants to usually. And then from top position, he delivers heavy ground and pound. He's got a submission game to go along with it, especially his guillotine choke's always been pretty decent. And then, of course, he's got the knockout power and K1 level striking on the feet. So the guy is a force, but it's that cardio, it's that chin that's always been that's hindered him, really. I mean, that's always been a factor for him in his losses. So I think that's going to come into play here as well. His cardio has looked a little bit better. I know he's been definitely putting in the work. And with that, his chin should improve a little bit too. But still, this is a real toss-up type of fight for me. I could see either guy winning this fight. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Overeem because I think he can dictate and control where this fight goes. I don't think Verdum's going to be able to get him to the ground. I think Overeem could land in top position if they do get to the ground, and I don't think Verdum subs him off his back. So the ground factor, I honestly, even though Verdum is the better submission artist overall, I think that in the cage, Overeem probably controls that aspect of the game. And I think he is a little bit better of a striker offensively as well. It's just that chin that concerns me more so than anything. So it is what it is. I think we'll probably see a finish here. If not, if it'd be a fairly competitive decision, but I think Overeem wins on the cards as well. So my pick is going to be Overeem, but man, I can't trust his chin that much.
And I think I'm going to come in the other way. Fabricio Verdum obviously won the first fight because of his ground game, and the second fight he lost it because of his ground game because he kept flopping to his back like a dummy, and Overeem was confident enough in his ground skills to dive into Verdum's guard and not get submitted. Verdum was actually winning the stand-up exchanges against Overeem at that point, and that was before really Verdum took off with his stand-up from working with the Kings MMA. Since then, I think Verdum's stand-up has become exceptional. I mean, he mixes things up well. He really focuses a lot on feints and trickery. But, I mean, he has power. His knees and elbows are ferocious. His kicking game has come a long way. So, honestly, I think he can go toe-to-toe with Alistair Overeem on the feet at this point. It's just all about him just using a lot of feints and not being obvious with his attack. Like, he was way over aggressive in his title defense against Stipe Miocic, charging forward with his chin up. You know, that's basically everything they tell you not to do, and Stipe just blasted him. We saw him return to form a little bit against Travis Brown, but even then, he was, you know, perhaps wading back a little bit too much because he was coming off of a knockout loss. If he can kind of go back to that form of the fighter that, you know, beat the tar out of Cain Velasquez on the feet, beat up Roy Nelson, just had these great moments and really has developed on the feet. If he can return to that form, then he's going to be in really good shape. I think he can beat Overeem on the feet and he can force Overeem to respect him on the feet. Overeem, obviously, he's a little looser up there, and he's got more experience just in kickboxing and then for spending almost the majority of his career on the feet. But for me, I think if Overeem wants to win this fight, he should probably be looking for takedowns because Verdum's a little too confident off of his back, and Overeem had no problem in his guard the last time they fought. So it's kind of crazy to think, but I think Verdum has a really good shot if he can keep this standing and work that Muay Thai game. Obviously, both guys have terrible chins, so if either guy lands a huge shot, then that could be the deciding factor. But overall, I think Verdum might be just a little bit better at this point, and as long as he can mix things up and use a lot of feints, I think he's got a really good chance of pulling this one off. So I think Fabricio Verdum wins the trilogy. Now, sticking with the heavyweight division, we have Daniel Omielinchuk, who is 19-7-1 with one no contest, taking on Curtis Blades, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'm from Blades -405, the comeback on Omielinchuk at +285. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, Blades -800, the comeback on Omielinchuk at +550. So gave Blades a lot of respect early on. Solid favorite at -4-1, but it wasn't enough. I mean, this guy is definitely one of the risers in the heavyweight division. He's a guy that I think potentially gets a title shot. He's got the overall skill set to do so, and the bettors out there believe it too, obviously, because Omielinchuk is now no joke, really. I know that a few fights back he might have been, but he's starting to get a little bit more respect, at least in the bettors' eyes, minus this fight, I guess, but or the MMA community in general. I think that for a while there, he was known as maybe one of the biggest cans on the UFC roster in the heavyweight division. Now, I don't think you could really say that, because Omielinchuk is definitely a dangerous guy on the feet. He's got some knockout power to go along with, decent takedown defense, and he's just a tough out. I mean, he's going to bring it. He has no quit in him either. He's got good submission defense overall. There's a lot of good things to like about Omielinchuk, but unfortunately for him here, he's running to Blades, where I think is just a little bit better in most of the areas. I mean, pure striking, I think Omielinchuk is probably the better striker. He's going to be at a reach disadvantage though, so I think Blades can land on the feet as well. And then on the ground, as far as pure submissions go, maybe Omielinchuk has a slight edge there as well, but Blades is wrestling and his grinding style, I think trumps all that as well. So I think Blades is just going to put the pressure on. He's going to push a high pace here. He's going to probably be able to get takedowns along the way. I mean, that's been Omielinchuk is his kryptonite. You know, when he does have losses, is being controlled up against the cage, getting put on his back a little bit, just out grinded. And Blades is going to do exactly that. So I get it. I understand why everybody's kind of coming in that way. And -800, that's ridiculous, I think. But it is what it is. I mean, thankfully, this is a case where Five Dimes did move a little bit stronger and a little bit faster, of course, so they don't get pounded with they're buried with too much Blades action here, because I do think he's going to win the fight. And again, I think eventually he puts a few solid wins together, he can make a title run. I mean, we'll see how that ends up. But Blades is definitely a guy to watch out for that is a legit heavyweight prospect in the mix of things right now in the heavyweight division. So my pick is Blades. I think he does get the win.
I'm going to keep this one short and sweet. Daniel Omielinchuk, if he can get things going on the feet, he's going to be in decent shape. I mean, he has a good left hand, good left kicks. But overall, I mean, he's going to be giving up about 30 pounds at least to Curtis Blades. He's given up 6 inches in reach. He's given up 4 inches in height. And Curtis Blades is an extremely powerful, aggressive wrestler. And if Curtis Blades does what I think he's going to do, I expect him to be just blasting Omielinchuk into the dirt with nasty double leg takedowns repeatedly until he either gets a TKO stoppage, which is the most likely outcome, also a doctor stoppage from cuts, from elbows raining down, or at least worst case scenario, riding out a decision. I think Curtis Blades is one of the best prospects in the heavyweight division, and I expect him to not just win, but win convincingly here. It's just all about getting the takedowns. If he gets those, he's in great shape. If he doesn't, Omielinchuk has a shot, but I really don't think Omielinchuk has much of a shot. So I'm siding with Curtis Blades big time. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have an interim UFC middleweight championship bout between Yoel Romero, who is 12-1, and Robert Whittaker, who is 19-4. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Romero, -130, the comeback on Whittaker at even money. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is actually Whittaker the favorite at -130. The line on Romero is now +110, so the line flipped completely. I mean, near a pick'em fight, either way. I could see it flipping kind of back and forth anyway originally, and it did just that. Whittaker has gained a ton of respect recently, and he deserves it. I mean, the guy is definitely a tough out and deserving to be in the mix of things in the title picture and fighting for this interim title. I mean, look what he did. Who beats Jacare like he did? I mean, he was able to survive on the ground when he needed to, get the fight back up to the feet. And then, of course, Whitaker has outstanding knockout power. I mean, I've really been a fan of this guy for a long time. I mean, he's made me cash in the past throughout his fights where he's been a little bit underestimated. So there's a lot of good things to like about Whitaker here. But of course, Romero, you could say a lot of the same things about him. I mean, the guy's a beast. Look at his streak in the UFC. I mean, he's really yet to lose a fight. I know a couple of those fights along the way were a little controversial or whatnot, but still Romero has been a beast to say the least, and he's getting better as well. So this is a great fight for the interim title. I think honestly, both of these guys, no disrespect to the champ, Michael Bisping. I think I've said it a while back too. I'm glad that Michael Bisping was able to earn that strap at 185 and wear that gold around his waist, because he's been such a good fighter. I mean, in the middleweight division for a long, long time. So I'm glad when a fighter has been around that long and has had to work his way up towards the top and the title shots and finally gets it. I mean, you got to be happy for the guy for sure. Now, I understand all of you guys out there probably hating on him and thinking, hey, he's afraid to fight real contenders or whatnot. It is what it is. I mean, from the business perspective, why wouldn't you want to fight George St. Pierre over one of these guys that could probably beat you? So I get that part, but I do understand what the fans are so hard on Bisping for as well. But that being said, either one of these guys, I do believe that Whitaker and Romero would defeat the champion, the current champion right now as well. So they deserve to be in the spot. And I think that, I mean, again, based on what their recent performances have been, Romero's win over Weidman was nothing but impressive. His win over Jacare was a little bit controversial to say the least. So, but before that, he was able to floor and just destroy Machida with elbows. So, I mean, these guys have faced good quality competition to earn the spot where they're at. And I think this fight could realistically go either way too. I lean a little bit more towards Whitaker. I think, I mean, and not that the youth factor play comes into play huge here, because I think, I mean, Romero being a 40-year-old is definitely in great shape. His cardio is a bit concerning, though. I mean, this is a 5-round fight. So going 5 rounds for Romero, that is going to be an interesting thing to see. I think Whitaker has the edge overall in cardio, but I don't think we're going to see it drag out too long either way. I think both these guys have enough devastating knockout power and athleticism that we're going to probably see one of them land and the other go out, obviously. So I lean a little bit more towards Whitaker. I think that his streak of amazing performances and wins for Romero here, undefeated in the UFC, finally comes to an end, and it's going to be against a worthy competitor in Whitaker here. So I do slightly lean towards Whitaker. I think that he finds that chin of Romero. I mean, it's been a little bit suspect to say the least at times. He's been managing to survive, though. I'll tell you what, he gets rocked and he's able to somehow survive and usually comes back and wins those fights. So you can't count Romero out, but I think that Whitaker's power is going to eventually be a little bit too much for him. And I think he does find that chin and probably puts him out. So my pick is going to be Whitaker by knockout, but realistically, this is another fight that it deserves to be in the pick'em aspect of things, because it is a true pick'em type of fight. It could really go either way. And with the majority of the public kind of leaning towards Whitaker as well, that kind of concerns me a little bit. Maybe we're underestimating Romero slightly, despite all his accomplishments. So we'll see how it all plays out. But for me, I got to side with Whitaker a little bit. I mean, I do think that he probably gets the job done here.
Robert Whitaker has just been defying expectations over and over and over again. I honestly thought that he was going to eventually lose in the middleweight division about 2 or 3 fights ago, and he just doesn't just keep winning. He's been smashing his opponents. I mean, I never in a million years thought that Whitaker would not just beat Jacare, but finish him. So Whitaker has just improved just almost exponentially since moving up to the middleweight division. I mean, his hands are crisp. His takedown defense is on point. His footwork is great. And it's not just his hands. It's his feet, too. I mean, he's had 2 fights now where he's set up the finish with beautiful head kicks against both Jacare and Derek Brunson. So Robert Whitaker is an absolute force right now in the middleweight division. And I think he's a really tough matchup here for Yoel Romero, especially with this being a 5-round fight. That's one thing you really have to take into consideration. Now, Romero slows down in fights, but it's kind of crazy. He has a ton of 3rd-round finishes, even though he gets exhausted. So you can never discount his power. I mean, he's finished Brunson in the 3rd round. He's finished, most recently, Chris Weidman in the 3rd round. So, I mean, this guy is definitely capable of putting you away at any moment's notice. He has fight-ending power. with a just ridiculous assortment of strikes. I mean, he really hurt Jacare with a spinning back fist. He's finished fights with flying knees. He's finished fights with his punches. He's finished fights with ground and pound, with elbows. I mean, he is devastatingly powerful and dangerous with just about any limb at any moment because of what such a freak athlete that he is. I mean, this guy was a Cuban Olympic athlete, a silver medalist in the Olympics. So he's one of the best athletes on the UFC roster, despite being 40 years old. So, like, he really defies his age. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he got started in his fight career later, so he hasn't really taken that wear and tear. He's really only had one or two fights where he's even taken a lot of damage. So I think he's in a good position here. The problem, though, is I just think Robert Whittaker might be a tough matchup for him. I mean, on the feet, Whittaker should be the better striker. And if Romero can't consistently get takedowns, then he's going to have to rely on some of those crazy, unorthodox attacks to catch Whittaker napping and put him to sleep to get the win. And I'm just not convinced that Romero can win this fight without it being inside the distance. I don't think he can win a decision. I think Whittaker could win a decision if he needs to. Like, if there's times where his opponent isn't giving him the openings, Whittaker's been content to sit back and win on points. So, I think the, with it being a 5-round fight, with it being for a title, as I think, it favors Robert Whittaker because I think he wins on the feet. I think he wins a decision if it goes to the distance. And I think that he can avoid the takedown game for extended periods of time. So my pick as well is going to be Robert Whittaker to become the interim UFC middleweight champion. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a rematch, but this time it's for the women's bantamweight championship as champion Amanda Nunes, who is 14-4, takes on challenger Valentina Shevchenko, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Nunes, minus 150, the comeback on Shevchenko at plus 120. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is exactly a pick on minus 110 either way. Shevchenko was recently the small favorite, so this line is another one that's near pick'em that's been kind of flipping back and forth a little bit as well. I do kind of get it. I thought the public more so might be on Nunes. But Shevchenko, I mean, if you go back and watch their last fight, there is a path to victory for Shevchenko, even though early on in that fight, it was a harsh fight as she almost got finished. But it's kryptonite for Nunes has always been her conditioning. And it's a shame because I think eventually it's going to probably cost her. And it might in this fight as well, because Shevchenko, in my opinion, is the best female fighter at 135 pounds as far as well-rounded skill set. I mean, Shevchenko can outstrike her opponents, as proven against Holly Holm. She can outgrapple her opponents. I mean, she's got victories by submission. She can outwrestle her opponents. She's got a good takedown game as well. She's a really complete fighter. She's tough as nails. She's hard to finish on the ground or on the feet. So she is a great fighter. Her conditioning is great. The only problem with Shevchenko is I think she's a tad bit small. And Nunes is just a beast. She's getting more confidence, obviously, by defeating the likes of Miesha Tate since then, defeating the likes of Ronda Rousey since then. I mean, right now, she's at an all-time high in confidence. I mean, she's getting in better shape. She seems like her cardio is somewhat getting better. It's hard to prove it because she's been destroying people recently as well. But I think even in the Shevchenko fight, the original one, I was expecting Nunes to kind of fade a little bit quicker than she did. And she ended up winning the first two rounds okay. So it was round three that Shevchenko took over. And I think a lot of people are expecting the same type of fight here. Now, I'm not so sure. I mean, what's scaring me is everybody's so confident for Shevchenko. We're all thinking the same thing here as well. So for me, Shevchenko, I've been on her since she made her UFC debut. She's been banking some cash for me. I mean, I obviously lost against Nunes, but outside of that, I mean, in her first fight with Nunes, but outside of that, I mean, she's been really a cash machine for a lot of bettors that have faith and have the belief in her and realize how good she can fight and how good she really is. So I have a ton of respect for Shevchenko, a lot of it, but here I think I'm going to have to go the opposite way and just get away from everybody that's kind of thinking along this way. And again, I originally did as well, but I think the Nunes, if you go back and look a little bit closer as well, I mean, she had Shevchenko in a lot of trouble. She rocked her on the feet. She had her on the ground, almost submitted her as well there. So I think Shevchenko is going to really have to weather that early storm, and it's going to be a heck of a storm. I'm not sure if she's going to do it at this point. Nunes knows what the deal here is, just like all of us. She knows that if she lets this fight drag out, she's probably going to lose that strap. She has to go in with the mindset of finishing Shevchenko early. So it's going to sway me enough that I think early on, despite me loving the skill set of Shevchenko, I think that she is going to lose round one, possibly lose round two if it gets that far, because Nunes is going to be just a striking machine early on. I don't even know if that's the word I'm looking for here, but I mean, she's just a beast on the feet. She's got a tremendous amount of knockout power. And again, her confidence level right now is at an all-time high. She knows she can hurt Shevchenko. She knows she could possibly finish her as well. So I'm going to go against the grain here, and I can't believe I'm saying it because, again, I've been such a huge fan of Shevchenko, but I think that Nunes probably does get it done. She finishes what she started early on in their last fight, and unfortunately for the Shevchenko backers out there, I think Nunes probably gets the finish in maybe round one or early round two here. So she needs to do so to probably get the win. I understand that, but I think I'm going to go with her. And again, a lot of it is because I think 90% of the people out there are expecting Shevchenko to kind of weather that storm. And I think that we're probably going to all be surprised and disappointed when she does not do that. And Nunes is getting a bit of disrespect at the current price right now. I mean, she's a worthy champion. She's put the time in. She's gotten better throughout her career. And I think that, you know, right now she's going to step in here and probably do what she does best, and that's maybe finish the fight. So Shevchenko, much respect to her, but I think that Nunes might be a little bit too much for her again in this fight. So my pick officially will be Nunes. But let me just say this. There's still a few days, obviously, before the fight. And as most of you guys know, on the close fights, pick'em type of fights out there, our official picks get posted on MMAOddsBreaker.com, our staff picks for UFC 213. So at the weigh-ins, if, you know, something's up or I don't see something I like, I might flip back to Shevchenko. So, because that was my early lean. So right now, I will pick Nunes, but make sure you stay tuned to our staff picks for the final selections for me, from Brian, from the rest of the guys as well. So that's my call here. Nunes probably gets the finish.
And I can totally see Nunes getting the finish. She was significantly bigger, significantly stronger than Shevchenko in their first fight. I mean, she had Shevchenko in a world of hurt in the first two rounds. She was in top position, raining down ground and pound. She was getting the better of her on the feet, especially in the first round. You know, Shevchenko had a lot of difficulty, you know, adapting to the size disparity. That being said, that third round was all Shevchenko. I mean, Nunes historically has had massive, massive conditioning problems. And typically, she usually runs out of gas after the first round. So I was even impressed that she made it two rounds before gassing against Shevchenko the first time. And if you watch her fight, she is getting even more explosive and more dangerous early in fights. I mean, you saw how quickly she took out Ronda Rousey, just the devastating punishment she delivered to Miesha Tate. So she's definitely capable of really putting a hurting on her opponents. It's just all about, for me, will Shevchenko be able to withstand the punishment that Nunes will deliver? Because Nunes is going to do some serious damage in that first round. Maybe the second round too, but especially the first. And Nunes, you know, she has gotten better and better. I mean, she has some serious, nasty first round finishes on her, to her credit. I mean, it's not just Rousey and Tate. I mean, she finished Sarah McMahon in the first round, who's one of the top contenders. She finished Julia Budd back in the day in the first round in seconds. So Shevchenko is really going to have to be on her bicycle in that first frame, and she needs to fight very defensively. I think she learned a lot in that first fight. She learned that as long as she can just avoid a little bit, then Nunes will run out of gas. It is a five-round fight, and I don't care how much Nunes has been working on her conditioning. You know, this is a fighter that is just too explosive and puts out too much energy trying to destroy her opponent quickly to really overcome that conditioning problem. So there is a possibility that Nunes, if she can get a hold of Shevchenko and really lay into her, that she can get the finish. But Shevchenko is so tough that I think she does withstand it, and I think that she turns the corner and she either gets a decision victory by winning the last three, maybe even four rounds, or Shevchenko could get a stoppage. I mean, she could have got a stoppage if that first fight was a five-round fight. Shevchenko was clearly very one-sided third round, and it was only going to get worse from there. I mean, we've seen Nunes run out of steam, like against Kat Zingano, crushed her in the first round, and then Zingano just turned it the tide on her and just bashed her and got a stoppage. So there's been multiple instances of Nunes not being able to get the early finish and then getting smoked. So I think that that's what happens here. I think Shevchenko does weather the early storm, and I think Shevchenko does become the new UFC women's bantamweight champion. So my pick is going to be Valentina Shevchenko. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 213. Now, our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.